I would like to share with you some information on 100 years of successful cancer treatments. Those that have health conditions that normally require the services of a physician are urged to consult with a physician. This is not intended to replace the services of a licensed medical provider. 100 years ago, Dr. John Beard discovered that his cancer patients were lacking in pancreatic enzymes. Dr. Beard was able to obtain raw sheep pancreas, which he fed to his cancer patients, and he was pleased to notice that they got well. His findings were published as early as 1906. You would have thought that if medical doctors were looking for ways to deal with cancer, they would have rejoiced at this information. But as you can imagine, the drug companies were not thrilled with this. There's not a lot of money to be made in the pancreatic enzyme area. And so Dr. Beard was labeled as a quack. His successful cancer treatment was all but forgotten. About 30 years later, Ernest Krebs Sr. and Ernest Krebs Jr., a father and son medical doctor team, continued Dr. Beard's research. They found that cancer indeed was a lack of pancreatic enzymes. They also discovered that it was possible to assist the enzymes with material found in apricot kernels. Apricot kernels contain chemicals that help the enzymes to break down tumors. Dr. William Donald Kelly is a dentist who at one time, about 1960, developed pancreatic cancer. He actually had a tumor that was sticking out through the skin of his abdomen far enough that it could be felt. Dr. Kelly also had some digestive difficulties, and one day he went to a pharmacy, asked the pharmacist what he should do for his digestive problem. The pharmacist suggested pancreatic enzymes. Dr. Kelly, who tended to do things with considerable enthusiasm, began taking large amounts of enzymes. It cleared up his digestive problems, and also he noticed that his tumor began to shrink. As he continued with the enzymes, his tumor completely cleared up, and he eventually ended up cancer-free. There were people that heard about this. Then, as now, there were a lot of people with cancer that were desperate for something to do to save themselves. Dr. Kelly consulted with several thousand cancer patients. I understand that he had about an 80% success rate with late-stage cancer, using enzymes as the primary treatment along with some metabolic balancing. I once had a lady come to consult with me on another subject, and she happened to mention that she'd gotten over cancer with Dr. Kelly's program. I asked her what enzyme she'd used, and she said it was the Carlson DA34. And so I said, how many did he have you take? She said a handful every 6 hours. People that I'm familiar with, people that I know, have done some experiments with the Carlson DA34 with good results for various kinds of cancers. We currently like the Biotics Research Intenzyme Forte a little bit better, but both enzymes have been used successfully by cancer patients. I don't consider enzymes to be a complete cure for cancer. I would never make the claim that enzymes are a cure for a cancer, but on the other hand, they are certainly an important part of a cancer-treating program. About 1920, Dr. Albert Abrams discovered that if there's an illness, there's a disturbance in the body's electrical field. And he invented equipment that could be used to determine what the disturbance was and where it is in the body's electrical field. And today there are practitioners that use equipment that comes from the work of Abrams. These are called Abrams machines or radionics devices. These devices have a set of dials that tell you what the problem is and a set of dials that tell you where in the body the problem is located. Dr. Abrams though he was a medical doctor and very well thought of in San Francisco medical circles, was eventually labeled by the Quack Watch people as the possibly the biggest quack of all times. Those that think that Dr. Hulda Clark is the biggest quack ever probably should realize that maybe Abrams is in first place. Maybe Dr. Clark could have the honor of being the biggest quack currently living. In any case, Dr. Abrams found ways to detect what was going on in the body, and he also developed treatment equipment that is actually easy to build using parts that are obtainable from Radio Shack. And on the radionics paper on this website, there is information on how to build your own equipment to help correct the body's electrical field and deal with tumors. So today what we do is, using equipment based on Abrams' work, we can either apply the electrical field to the body, and that will make changes, or what we often do is put the enzymes that we use and other materials such as chlorella on an electrical pad and charge it up for 12 hours using these settings that were developed all those years ago. We can also use the equipment that comes from Dr. Abrams' work to run tests on materials such as a saliva sample, which will give us clues as to what's going on in the body. There are practitioners today that are very successful and very accurate with that kind of testing. In 1932, Dr. Royal Raymond Rife announced the discovery of what he called the BX pathogen. The BX was a virus or virus-like particle that he found in a breast cancer lump. He was able to isolate this germ, and he discovered that he could kill it using a frequency of 11,780,000 cycles per second. Also on that same page of lab notes is the frequency 17.6 meters, which works out to about 17,033,000 cycles per second, or hertz, as we say now. So I am in contact with people that have experimented with these early frequencies, and they've had good results with reducing the virus levels in the body, and they've had good results with cancer recovery. Again, I'm not saying that frequency therapy is a cure for cancer, but we do know that cancers, all cancers, are viral conditions, and that using frequencies to reduce the virus is a good way to produce some health improvement in cancer patients, and the result is very often spontaneous remissions. I once met a lady from Korea. She was brought to this country by her husband. She had very late stage cancer. It started off as a breast tumor, and by now it was in her lungs. Her right lung was full of tumors that could be easily seen on her x-ray. And she also had cancer in her bones. She was in intense pain, and she was being heavily medicated for the pain, so that she was so nauseated she could not keep anything down, including liquids. She could not take any supplements. And so this was obviously a difficult case. She was sent here by some Korean physicians who were wanting to use her as a test case. So it appeared to me that she only had a few days to live. I told them about the frequency therapy. They took equipment to their motel room. One was a BNK function generator, BNK 4040, that would produce the early frequencies for sarcoma, which was the case that she had. They used 11,430,000 cycles per second for about half an hour a day, and they used equipment that would make the 2008 frequency for about another 5.5 hours a day for 6 hours a day total. When she first started this, because of the bone cancer and her right shoulder joint being mostly missing, She was in intense pain, could not move her arm. After 1 week, she was pain-free, and she was able to go off all of her pain medication. After 1 month, all indications of cancer were gone. She had good movement of her arm. She was able to eat anything she wanted. She could take any supplements that she wanted to take. When she went back to Korea, celebrating the fact that she had made some considerable progress, she met with the medical doctors who gave her a CA-125 test, and it appears that the score did not go down adequately to their liking, so that they said, they told her that she was now healthy enough to do some real treatment, and she went on radiation and chemotherapy, and shortly after that she died. So it is interesting how people, even though they are obviously making some good progress, can be coerced into doing things that will kill them. Today, there are quite a few people using frequency therapy devices. They're using 2008 for sarcoma, 2128 for carcinoma. Please be aware that the medical diagnosis of cancer is made strictly based on the kind of tissue that the cancer occurs in. So a diagnosis of carcinoma does not guarantee that you should use the carcinoma frequency. You may actually have the sarcoma virus in a tumor with a diagnosis of carcinoma. So until you know for sure, it's a good idea to use 2008 and 2128 both. I've also found, much to my surprise, that the frequency of 727 seems to have benefit with cancer patients. There was once a patient with late stage prostate and bone cancer. He was sent to a Rife practitioner because nothing else had worked, and he was certainly going to die given the situation that he was in. So this man got a hold of a frequency device called an EMEM3, took it home, and used it on himself. He would go to bed at night, read in bed, put the bulb of the tube on his abdomen and run it for half an hour to an hour. Sometimes he would fall asleep, run the device up to an hour and a half or so. And after 6 months, I got a call from his physician saying that it looked like he was making some progress. And 6 months later, again, after a total year of using the device, his physician called me again to say that he's now cancer-free. This was several years ago, and he's currently working in a Safeway store, even though he's in his middle 70s. He seems to be doing fine. And the thing that was surprising about this was I called this man up and asked him exactly what he had done, what he was doing for his treatment, and he explained about using the device in bed for half an hour to an hour and a half a night. And I said, well, tell me about the frequency of program you did. He said, well, I thought I was only supposed to use 727, so that's all I used. So surprisingly, that one frequency seemed to have made a huge difference in his recovery. So today it is recommended that if people are going to use frequency therapy, that 727 should be a part of the treatment. Dr. Rife was able to treat people for much shorter times. In 1934, a clinic was held at the University of Southern California in San Diego, out at the Scripps Ranch, and 16 late-stage patients were given to Dr. Rife to treat using his frequency device. And after the time of the clinic was done, all 16 were pronounced well, and he was able to treat them for 3 minutes every third day. Well, until someone discovers exactly what Dr. Rife did, we're going to be using considerably longer run times than that. So typically, people are using times in the area of a total of an hour and a half or 2 hours or even more per day. Dr. Johanna Budwig, Polish physician, published some research that she'd done in 1959. She found that you could take low-fat cottage cheese, mix it with flax oil, and that this combination produced a reaction in the body that was very highly anti-tumor. The typical dose that people use seems to be in the area of 1 tablespoon of flax oil or flaxseed oil, also called linseed oil. 1 tablespoon for each 50 pounds of body weight. Each tablespoon of flax oil should be mixed with 2 to 4 tablespoons of low-fat cottage cheese. So if a person were going to use this as a nutritional program against cancer, they would take their body weight, divide it by 50. So a 150-pound person would take 3 tablespoons of flax oil per day, 1 in the morning, 1 at noon, 1 in the evening. Try to divide the doses up as much as possible. A 200-pound person would take a dose at morning, noon, dinner time, and then at bedtime, again dividing it up as much as possible throughout the day. Each tablespoon is mixed with between 2 and 4 tablespoons of low-fat cottage cheese. I'm in contact with people that have used this as their primary cancer program for as long as 10 years. They have not completely recovered from cancer, but they've at least been able to hold their own and in some cases make slow progress. Well, if there's a program that is cheap and effective like this and easy to do and not unpleasant and certainly not harmful, then it certainly should be a part of anyone's cancer program. I have an acquaintance who told me that he has experimented with cottage cheese and flax oil for many years, and he said that he had noticed that if people with leukemia tried this program, that all of them did well, at least until someone talked them into doing something that was very harmful and would likely end their life in the area of radiation and chemotherapy. So about 2 months ago, a man called me and asked me if I had much experience with leukemia, and I said, no, I did not. There was one website, or one recovery story on my website, the Jimmy story that's at the cancer part of the website. That incident had taken place in California, and I'd gotten the story from the doctor that had treated Jimmy through Jimmy's mother. She had gone to the doctor and gotten the exact details of what had been done, the program they'd done, and the frequency they'd done, and so on. So this man called and asked if I'd had much experience or if I'd observed people treating their own leukemia, and I said, no, I had not, except for that one story that I'd gotten secondhand from the little boy's mother. But I said, if you wanted to try it, there are some things that certainly ought to be done. One would be the Johanna Budwig flax oil and cottage cheese program. I also mentioned that we use an extract of elderflowers, peppermint, black walnut, and burdock root. It's called EPBWBR. We use that to support the body's fight against viruses, and we know that leukemia is a virus, and that particular extract has been used historically for people treating the leukemia virus. So he decided to do that. I told him about the enzymes, although I had no idea if they would be any help or not in a leukemia situation. I know they are beneficial in solid tumors like carcinoma and sarcoma, but I did not know about leukemia. In any case, I told him about the enzymes, and so he decided he would give all this a try. And for good measure, we threw in a multivitamin mineral called Oxygenic B. So I never heard from him anymore. He's not a client of mine. We never did any testing or any kind of work together other than that one phone call. And then about 2 weeks ago, he called me up and he said that the program that I'd outlined to him had not worked too bad. He said that he'd gotten the flax oil and cottage cheese, that he had taken the Oxygenic B multivitamin mineral, he had taken the EPBWBR, And he'd taken the enzymes, although he did not take six every 6 hours. He just took one of the DA34 per meal. He also said that he got himself, he was able to borrow a frequency generator called an F-scan, and that he used it to apply the frequencies that Jimmy used. And he said that he applied them for 4 minutes per day. And after about a month of treatment, he went back and had his oncologist run another blood test. His original white blood cell count had been 250,000 after a month on this treatment. He got a new set of blood work done, and his white blood cells were down to 16,000. The normal is about 5,000 to either 10,000 or 15,000, depending on whose ranges you use. In any case, it appeared like what he was doing was making some progress. Well, the only thing he was getting from the medical doctor was some steroid hormones to try to make him more comfortable. So he asked the oncologist if anything they were doing could have produced a lowering in the white blood cell count. And the oncologist said no. He went off the program. He ran out of supplements. And he called the other day to say that his white blood cells had started to creep up a little bit. So it looked like one month of treatment wasn't quite enough. So I'm not suggesting that this is a cure for leukemia. It's just that when you start dealing with the reasons for things, then we can expect the body to start healing itself. This is quite the opposite to a medical model. With the medical model, we don't care so much about the reasons for things. We just want to stop the symptoms from happening. With a health-oriented model, we don't want to stop the symptoms so much as we want to support the body and give it what it needs in order to be healthy. And as the body is healthy, then the symptoms begin to go away. In the 1950s, a medical doctor by the name of Emanuel Revisi did a lot of work with the human chemistry, and he discovered what we call the anabolic and catabolic imbalances. These are also known as the anaerobic dysaerobic imbalances, and these are described in some detail on the metabolic balancing portion of this website, royalrife.com. He found that there were two basic chemical imbalances. Now we know that there are about 10 basic chemical imbalances that are easy to detect and correct. But in Dr. Revisi's case, he discovered two of them. The dysaerobic or catabolic imbalance is a chemistry where there is an acid urine and a really alkaline saliva. In fact, the saliva will often be well over a pH of 7. The surface tension is low. If you put a drop of liquid on a flat surface, it forms a bead, a round bead, and the size or the height of the bead is determined by the surface tension. With the dysaerobic imbalance, people are making very large amounts of free radicals in their own chemistry, and these oxidized and peroxidized fats end up in the urine, causing the urine surface tension to be very low. The sample will also tend to be kind of a dark color, and it just actually looks thick and dense when you look at it. So the urine pH is low, the saliva pH is high, surface tension is low, and the specific gravity is high. If you put a medical dipstick in there, the specific gravity is 1.025 or 1.030. Very often, in fact, most of the time, it's right at the very limit of the paper's ability to measure. So that's the dysaerobic imbalance. That's an example of a person with an alkaline saliva pH that is actually very sick and making large amounts of free radicals. These people often have problems with insomnia and migraines and other kinds of pain. They also tend to grow tumors very rapidly. A relative of mine was growing tumors at the rate of about one a week, and I tested his chemistry. It was extremely dysaerobic. He had arranged for a biopsy to see if it could be discovered just what these lumps were that were growing all over his body. a radionics test had showed them to be cancer. But of course, you cannot do a diagnosis of cancer without actually taking a piece of the tumor and sending it to a lab. So in any case, he did schedule a biopsy to have one of these things removed, and he also got his chemistry corrected at the same time. 1 week later, there were no detectable tumors at all. There was once a lady with ovarian cancer who came to consult with me. She had an extremely dysaerobic imbalance. She told me that she'd gotten cancer after a visit to the hospital with apparently a twisted bowel. She told me she'd had about 24 x-rays of the exact same spot on her abdomen while she was in the hospital, and after she came out of the hospital, a lump formed there, which was later then diagnosed as being ovarian cancer. I checked her chemistry. She was extremely dysaerobic, again with the very alkaline saliva, and she corrected her chemistry using a material called oxygenic D-plus drops. Not a very pleasant tasting material, but it's the same, one of the same things that Dr. Rivisi used in his research. And she did some of the other things, you know, antiviral programs and so on, that people with that are doing alternative cancer programs normally would do. About a month or a month and a half later, her mass that had been the size of an average cantaloupe was now the size of a small to medium orange. About that time, she met a nutritionist who told her that she was treating it exactly the opposite to what she should, that all cancer is actually anabolic and anaerobic. It's not dysaerobic and catabolic. She took a material that made her less anabolic and more catabolic, less anaerobic and more dysaerobic. In other words, it pushed her back into the chemistry that she'd had when she started. And the tumor swelled up to the size of a watermelon in a very short time, and she died. Before she died, she told her family that this other person had given her bad information, and that the result was that she'd ended up in a situation from which she was not able to recover. It is true that tumors are an anabolic or anaerobic chemistry. That is, that they, instead of using oxygen to combine with glucose, they tend to use glucose without oxygen, and they ferment glucose into lactic acid, creating an acid buildup inside the cell. And it also creates an acid buildup in the tissue around the cell, and this results in an acid saliva. But it is not true that the overall person's chemistry is always going to be anabolic or anaerobic. It's just that the tumor itself is that way. Sometimes the person's chemistry is anabolic or anaerobic. In this case, the urine pH is really alkaline, 7.5 or more often. The saliva pH is now acid. The surface tension is high. The sample is actually very watery, just almost like water itself. And the specific gravity is low. It is a very dilute, not a dense sample. This chemistry is also possible with cancer patients, and the chemistry is corrected with a material called oxygenic A-plus drops. That's another chemistry that Rivisi used. It is actually a magnesium thiosulfate. It is not true that everyone is too acid, and that the goal of all health building should be to make people more alkaline. Those that talk like that do not have a way to actually determine what the body's chemistry is doing, or they would not talk like that. The pH of the body, the pH of the blood cannot be determined with the saliva pH or the urine pH. In order to find out the pH of the blood, it is necessary to either measure the pH of the blood without exposing the blood to oxygen. Once you expose the blood to oxygen, you no longer have a valid pH. Or if you measure the person's respiratory rate and how long they can hold their breath. Those give us clues that we can actually tell what is happening with the pH. So you can look at the material on metabolic balancing on this website, and also the paper on pH if you're interested in more on that. Dr. Hulda Clark published her first book in 1993. She discovered that cancer patients had certain parasites in their bodies. They tended to have the parasite, or always had the parasite, Fasciolopsis busci, which is the human intestinal fluke. And she also discovered that the chemical isopropyl alcohol, which of course is used everywhere in medicine, and it's also used either as an ingredient or as a contaminant in a very large amount of household cosmetics and foods. She found that in the presence of isopropyl alcohol, that the Fasciolopsis busci could do its entire life cycle within the human body. So people ended up with large amounts of parasites in their bodies. Parasites make certain chemicals that are cancer-causing. It is also thought that a host for Rife's BX carcinoma virus and his BY sarcoma virus, that a host for these viruses could also be the human intestinal fluke. I have noticed that people that were not making good progress because they were focusing on killing the virus would make much better progress once they did a good parasite program and dealt with that side of it. When they did that, then the virus levels would also go down rapidly, and that would make a rapid improvement. Dr. Clark's frequency range, by the way, that she researched, she discovered frequencies for about 235 viruses, bacteria, and molds and worms. That her frequency ranges that she researched were about 50,000 to around 800 or 900,000 hertz. And we are finding that it appears that the bulk of pathogens actually do have their frequencies in that range. It is also interesting that the frequency ranges that Dr. Rife researched were in the Clark area and up, so that these frequencies that people are using today in the area below 10,000 cycles per second are not actually original frequencies that were used by Dr. Rife. It appears that those frequencies appeared about 1950, and it is not exactly clear where those frequencies came from. I'm not saying that they're bad or useless frequencies. They are very useful frequencies, and they can be used on equipment that people can easily obtain. I'm just saying that they're not the original Rife frequencies. And from time to time, I have seen people use Dr. Clark's program where the main thing they did was avoid toxins and kill parasites, and the result was that they had spontaneous remissions of their cancers. Dr. William Philpott was a person who wrote a book, Brain Allergies, which was one of the first nutrition books that I really got involved in 25 years ago. Dr. Philpott discovered that you could apply the negative face, that is the north face of a flat magnet, to a tumor, and the tumor would tend to shrink. And there has been some research that the negative or north face of a flat magnet would cause the shrinkage of tumors, and that the positive face of a flat magnet or the south face of a flat magnet would cause some tumor growth. And therefore, we do not advocate using tumors that have both poles on the same surface. And there's a popular magnet company that uses magnets that have both the negative and positive poles that are applied to the body. And this seems to be working very well for pain relief. But if there's any possibility of cancer, I personally would not recommend using this kind of magnet. Dr. Philpott reports that one time his wife had a cancerous tumor on her forehead, He took a small round magnet about the size of the tumor, taped it on her forehead, left it on there 24 hours a day, and the tumor came out, came loose around the edges, and just came out without any other treatment at all. I recently saw a man in his 90s who had a rectal cancer. He was told a couple days before his 90th birthday that he had a cancer of the rectum. He decided, well, first of all, the medical people told him that there was no treatment that was really recommended for him. Apparently they felt that at his age he could not really tolerate the kind of treatment that they had to offer. They said that surgery was not recommended in that situation. And I think he was a little bit discouraged about that, but as is often the case in a story like this, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. He got himself a frequency device. He applied the appropriate frequencies to himself every day. He took large doses of enzymes. He took the elder peppermint combination to support his body against the virus. And, of course, he also was doing the frequencies against the virus. He also sat on the negative face of a flat magnet. So he would take his wallet out of his back pocket to keep from erasing the credit cards, and he would sit on the negative face of a flat magnet, sometimes for several hours at a time. After a few months, his doctor told him that he was making good progress, and he's since free of any indications of cancer, and according to radionics testing, is also making good progress. And I've run into other people who use the negative face of a flat magnet with good results. And by the way, if you want to be able to detect which face is the north or negative face of a magnet, if it's a magnet that's designed for medical or health-related use, it will probably be marked either painted green or marked north or marked negative. If you have a compass, you can hold the compass near the, don't hold it too near the magnet because the magnet may erase the compass, but hold it a few inches away or several inches away from the compass from the flat face of the magnet, and observe which way the end of the needle points on the magnet. If the compass says that the face of the magnet is north, then it is north. In other words, the same needle that points to the magnetic north pole of the Earth should point to the north pole of the, or the north face of the magnet, and that is the face you want to use. You do not want to use a magnet that has the same energy as the south pole of the Earth. I think that's dangerous. Dr. Omura, medical doctor in the eastern USA, discovered that all tumors contain a virus, and of course that's something that was already known. And he also discovered that all tumors contain mercury. And that's a very interesting and useful bit of information to have. He discovered that it was difficult to kill the virus as long as the mercury was in the body or in the tumor. So what he would do is he would give people fish oil capsules at the rate of 4 a day, 1-4 times a day, and he would also give a cilantro tablet with each dose. And the result of this was that the cilantro would take out the mercury and the fish oil would kill the virus or support the body in killing the virus, and that tumors would begin to shrink. I'm in contact with a dentist who tells me that he has had 10 or 12 cases of cancer recover in a row using cilantro, fish oil, and some frequency therapy using Rife equipment. Mercury is a big issue. We have a lot of sources of mercury. There can be mercury from various kinds of paint, like latex paints. We know that people that eat fish build up their mercury levels. Fillings in teeth are a big issue. And we also know that the various shots, flu shots, are sources of mercury. In fact, on another place on this website, there is a disclaimer that a company requires people to sign that they understand that they're getting a shot of mercury when they get their flu shot. And we know that there are people that can deal with mercury and dump it out of their bodies. They can excrete mercury well. We know that there are other people that cannot. The people that can excrete mercury, they can survive their baby shots that they got as a child, and they can survive the flu shots that they got. They can survive the metal in their teeth. They can survive eating fish. And they do okay. They still have their brain to a ripe old age, and they don't seem to be suffering from mercury. We know that there are other people who have such poor ability to excrete mercury that they are severely damaged by as little as one mercury filling. One mercury filling causes them to have serious, debilitating, and drastic health problems. There was a study done at the University of Kentucky about a year ago. They took autistic babies, took their first baby haircuts, sent them to the lab for hair analysis, and they found healthy babies of the same age and genders to match with the autistic babies. And they took their first baby haircuts and sent them to the labs. They also interviewed the mothers to find out how much fish they ate and how many metal fillings they had. And they also got information about flu shots and that sort of thing. And what they found out when all the numbers were crunched was that, number one, the autistic babies had more mercury exposure than the healthy babies had. But on the other hand, they averaged 1/7 of the mercury in their hair that the healthy children had. Now, what does this mean? That mercury is good for you? No, it means that healthy babies can dump mercury. They dump it in their hair. They dump it in their urine. They dump it through their bile into their stool. That healthy babies and healthy adults have ways of getting rid of mercury. Autistic babies did not have these ways to dispose of the mercury that they were exposed to. They didn't have any way to dispose of the mercury that they were exposed to. And so at some point, as they continued to become injected with mercury, when they were a few months old, it tipped them over the edge. The mercury, instead of being dumped in their hair and in their urine, was accumulating in their brains and in their nerve tissue, and they were pushed over the edge into autism. Some people can survive all this into old age, but they are misguided and foolishly encouraged to get flu shots. And each flu shot, of course, contains about 25 micrograms of mercury. And so at some point, this tips them over the edge, and they get what is now sometimes being called adult autism or Alzheimer's disease. There was a study done, and that's reported elsewhere on this website, where the number of flu shots that people had was recorded, and they found that the people that, between 1970 and 1980, the people that had five or more flu shots in a row, that is, they had flu shots 5 years in a row, now have a tenfold increase in the risk for Alzheimer's. They have 10 times more likelihood of getting Alzheimer's than those that had less mercury exposure between 1970 and 1980. And by the way, getting back to the autistic babies, the very sickest babies, the ones with the worst symptoms, only had 1/30th the mercury in their hairs, in their hair samples, as the healthy babies. So mercury is a very big issue. I'm not suggesting you run out and get your fillings removed today. Getting your fillings removed is very risky. I've personally known a number of people who ended up flat on their back, spending 20 to 22 hours in bed a day as a result of catastrophic neurological problems caused by having their metal fillings removed. Even if precautions are taken, The patient still is going to breathe some of that mercury dust, and it can go into the lungs where it is absorbed into the bloodstream, and very drastic and serious things can happen. So these are some basic things that cancer patients are doing. They're taking enzymes, they're using radionics on their supplements, they're using frequency therapies, cottage cheese and flax oil, correcting their chemistry. They're killing parasites and avoiding toxins using Dr. Clark's program. They're using magnets, and they're using cilantro and other materials to deal with the mercury issue. And this kind of program is producing lots and lots of spontaneous remissions, hundreds of them. There are some dangers, however. The first one is that you need to know that tumors often tend to grow and then they shrink. They tend to grow. Sometimes they become inflamed. Sometimes they become painful. And then after a few weeks at that stage, or even as little as 2 weeks at that stage, then they shrink and disappear entirely. But during that time, the oncologist is going to say that you have blown it, you've been a very foolish person, you did not have the surgery and radiation and chemo when you should have had it, now you've blown your window of opportunity. And these people are literally often told that they are going to have the mastectomy now, they're going to have the lymph nodes out now, and they're going to get radiation and chemo, and then they are going to die. Even though they're going to do all this, they're still told that they're going to die. So actually a curse is put on them, and in their mind they agree with this. It's almost a form of hypnosis or mind control, that they are now told they're going to die, and their body begins to prepare to do that, when actually the swelling of the tumor may not be bad news at all. I've seen numerous cases where they became larger and then began to shrink. We'll be hearing at least one story along that line at the 2004 RIFE conference here in Seattle in October. Another story along this line relates to another danger, and this danger is that there are various herbal combinations that kind of counteract each other. It's a little bit like vinegar and baking soda. There are certain things you can do with vinegar. There are certain other things you can do with baking soda. But if you mix the two of them together, a chemical reaction takes place, and both of them lose the properties that they had before the reaction took place. And it is exactly the same with a number of herbal combinations. A couple examples. The elder peppermint combination that we're seeing people use to support the body against the viruses is an effective product. The product Essiac tea is also an effective product, although we don't like it as well. But if you mix those two together, there's a reaction, and neither one of them produces the results that you want. Another material that causes these same kinds of problems is green tea. Green tea reacts with the elder peppermint combination and also reacts with many other herbal combinations, with the result that you simply do not make the you do not get the results that you're hoping to get. And I'm going to tell you the account of two different people with very similar situations but very different outcomes. And one of them used a very simple program. The other one owned a health food store, and he decided he wanted to do a large number of other technologies and herbs and so on at the same time. The first man lives in the middle of British Columbia. He had a growth on his neck about the size of half of a medium orange, quite a large lump sticking out the side of his neck under his ear. And he decided to go on a program where he would do frequency therapy. He treated himself on the appropriate frequencies for about an hour and a half a day. And he took enzymes, and he took the herbal combinations and all the things that I've mentioned previously. He called me up after about a month and a half of this treatment to say that his growth was growing. It was larger than it had been. It's inflamed. He was in a lot of pain. He'd been to the emergency room. They'd put him on morphine. And I thought, you know, this guy's doing everything right. There's no reason that we should be losing him in a situation like this. He's treating himself using a very complete program, but not doing anything that was inappropriate. He wasn't taking green tea, and he wasn't using Essiac and so on. So I wasn't sure what was going on, but he just struggled along, and one night in desperation, he went back to the emergency room, and he said, you people just have to do something for me. So they took a scalpel and cut into this lump and out squirted a brown liquid. They took that, sent that to pathology. Turned out to be a staph infection that had apparently been a result of the biopsy. And he was pronounced cancer-free. There was no cancerous material any longer in the lump. About the same time, a young man in this area developed a lump that looked very similar, large mass, about the size of half of a medium orange, underneath his ear. He went on a program. He used frequency therapies. He took enzymes. He worked on the virus with the appropriate herbal combinations. But because he owned a health food store and he would get on the internet and he had some background information on things that were reported to be good for cancer, he decided to do a lot of other things at the same time. I told him I was concerned about this, that a simple program was more likely to produce health than a really complicated program. But he insisted, and he took a complicated program with his health food store items as well as the things that I've mentioned to you previously. The tumor continued to grow. It wasn't making any progress at all. And eventually he submitted to a 9-hour surgery where they tried to get the bits and pieces and the arms and legs of this growth out of his body. It was all tangled up in his throat and vocal cords and all the way up to his salivary glands. And then he went on radiation, and not too long after that, a tumor developed on the other side, and he eventually died. And it seemed to me like it was completely unnecessary, but there have been other cases of people insisted on doing complicated programs, and it didn't work as well as simple programs work. Along the line of tumors swelling before they shrink, this is a problem with brain tumors. We've seen a number of people treat themselves for brain tumors and recover, but if frequency equipment is used really aggressively, the tumor tends to swell, and there really isn't much room for swelling in the brain. So neurological symptoms develop in a situation like that until they back off and slow down and proceed at a slower rate. Another situation is lung cancer. We've seen a case or two where people treated lung cancer very aggressively. It did not happen this way with the lady from Korea, but it has happened in a few other cases where a fluid leaked into the lungs from the tumor as it was coming apart, and then the tumors had to be, or the fluid had to be drained out of the lung. One other issue, or actually two other issues, one of them is that if proper progress is not being made, if you're doing all these things and you don't feel like you're making the progress you want to be making, the dental issue is something that needs to be considered. We have seen cases where progress was slow and the main issue turned out to be a root canal or a pocket of infection underneath a tooth. And elsewhere on this website are four dental charts. You can go and look and see which teeth affect which part of the body. And on those charts, you can tell what teeth are likely to be affecting the part of the body that you're dealing with. So there's a specific tooth, for example, that affects the right breast or the left breast, or a specific tooth that affects the lungs or the ovaries or any other part of the body. So it may be necessary to have root canal teeth pulled. And I know that's an inconvenience. It's going to run into some expense. But in some situations, that may be the choice that needs to be made in order to produce health. And one other issue is that there are people that believe that all cancers have as one of their roots an emotional shock. And elsewhere on this website, in fact, there's a link to this from the cancer sheet, royalrife.com/cancer.html. There's a link from that page to information on dealing with emotional shock. If we have emotional shock, we need to choose to forgive the other people that were involved in order to really deal with emotional and spiritual issues. We need to learn how to receive forgiveness from God. Take a look at the paper, the information and details on how to receive forgiveness from God, how to forgive others, and how to deal with these emotional issues is presented.